So today I am going to start a new sutta, and this is quite common and quite known to you. And this is Metta Sutta, loving kindness. So commonly known as Karaniya Metta Sutta, and this is very popular, and we all are familiar with it. And every day sometimes people are chanting it, and therefore, it is accepted as one of the frequently used suttas available in the Sutta Nipata. And from them, among the verses available for sutta, this particular sutta, I'm going to discuss only the first few verses. And before going to the content of it, I like to mention that basically what is the reason for Buddha to explain this sutta or preach this sutta. Actually, on one occasion, many monks came to the Buddha while he was in Travati to get some meditation advice. So Buddha have given them meditation advice. Now what happened is, so all these monks now taken the meditation advice, and now they are going to a fairly remote forest to meditate. Because as they approach, the villagers recognize them, they start supporting them, and they invited, please stay with us. So we can give enough support to you. So you can spend your time in this particular forest. This forest is very beautiful, and we can prepare some dwelling places for you. And therefore, please use this forest. And for the alms, just come to our village and we will give you all the support. So this kind of an invitation came from the villagers. So as a result of that, these monks selected that particular village and the forest for their dwelling. So now they went to the forest and they started staying there one night, and it was pretty good. And the forest is very calm and the whole conducive environment is available, and they were meditating well. But unfortunately, there were some three deities, and because of the morality of the monks, and when they are sitting under the tree on the ground, so these three deities can't stay on the trees. So they have to come down and have to spend time again in the ground, not on the top of the tree. So they were anyway thinking that these monks may leave next day. And they were thinking, okay, these monks are going on a journey. Only a single night they are going to stay here. And most probably they may leave. So that was the idea they had. But next day morning, so the monks get up and they went to alms round to that particular village and came back, had their meals. And again, that day night also, they are staying there, staying in the same forest. So the three deities found it difficult, because even today night, they have to spend without sleep, away from the dwelling places, away from their natural, ordinary dwelling places, usual dwelling places. They have to stay in the ground, on the ground. But the third day also the same. So likewise, now they understood, okay, these monks are not going to leave. So now they are going to stay long time in this forest. So it would be very difficult for us, because we can't spend time in this ground. And we are now losing our dwelling places. We better find out the method to chase these monks away. So this is what they discussed, and ultimately they decided to show some horrible sounds, horrible sounds, and some nasty kind of smells, and some fearful visuals. So they start showing to the monks. So monks now get fearful. Sometimes they get some really bad smells, unbearable smells, and sometimes unbearable sounds. Now they start hearing individually, each one of them separately. Now they are facing all these. Now a few days going on, and they now can't concentrate. They now can't meditate, and they can't even continue their well-being. and some of them get sick, some of them start shivering, some of them become depressed. And one day the chief monk summoned all the monks and he is asking, in the first few days I found all of you are doing really well. Your faculties appear very good, bright. But now you all like fainted, all like in a bad situation. What's really going on? Now one by one monks start telling what are their difficulties. One said that I am hearing fearful sounds. Another one said I am smelling really bad odors. Some others say I am seeing various horrorful visuals. It's very difficult. So everybody has that kind of a issue now. So they decided, okay, this is not a good place to meditate. We better go and inform the Buddha. Now they went to the Buddha and they informed that the place that we went is not suitable. We are having all these troubles. So please send us, give us, instruct us another place. Now Buddha, through his vision, the Buddha is checking what would be the another beautiful or appropriate place for these monks. What is their best place? But Buddha couldn't find any best place other than this particular place. Again, therefore, Buddha is asking, please go to the same place and start meditating. But while going there, you better preach this Dhamma, preach this Metta Sutta. Then those deities may start loving you, may start helping you, rather than trying to chase you. So this is the advice Buddha has given. So now again, monks went back to the same forest while preaching this Metta Sutta. And not only they are merely preaching, they start practicing it. They start doing it. And when Buddha was giving the advice, he mentioned that this will be a recovery for you, this will be a blessing for you. Not only that, this will be a meditation object for you. So Metta meditation is one of the meditation objects. You can use first as a Samatha meditation and next you can use it as a Vipassana meditation. So actually, so after the Buddha's advice, now they approach the forest while reciting this verse, the Sutta, Metta Sutta. And now those deities start helping them and they start protecting them. And lot of benefits now they are getting. And Buddha mentioned when he is preaching this Metta Sutta, it will be a blessing to you. It will be a kind of guard for you. At the same time, it will be a meditation object for you. So if one is using Metta, loving kindness as a meditation object, so one can start properly or systematically, maybe based on the Samatha, and later it can turn into Vipassana. Say for example, if one can start with loving kindness towards oneself, may I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering. So likewise, very simple phrase, and you are using it as a repeated verse, repeated phrase. At the same time, you are wishing you that kind of good thing wholeheartedly to yourself. You have to be honest too in that. It's not that simply mere words, rather it has to be felt deeply. At the beginning you might not feel it deeply, but later as you are continuing the practice, you may feel it deeply, honestly. It has to be felt. And later you can use another person, maybe a kind of a respectable person, whom that you really love, whom that you really respect. Assume that he is in front of you and you are now spreading metta towards that person and to another person. So likewise, you are now promoting this metta, developing this metta, and you are able to develop same amount of metta you have for yourself towards this person as well. Later you can develop it to another person who may be a kind of a neutral person and maybe a lovable person, a person that you really like. And even later to a person that you sometimes don't like. Now there is no difference. You can spread metta to anyone. And now you can even develop metta to a particular group,
the whole group, the whole beings, all human beings, all the beings, and all the beings in the front direction, all the beings in the right direction, all the beings in the rear direction, all the beings in the left direction, all the beings in the upper direction, all the beings in the lower direction. So likewise, now all the direction now you are covering, so that there is no any kind of a barrier to the spreading of metta. Now very much like you are breaking all the barriers. As an individual, as a person, there is no such barrier. You can spread metta to anyone, all the beings. And again, there is no barrier in terms of the direction. To all the directions, similarly, equally, you can spread metta. So this is the most, say, profound, or the culmination of metta. Say you are coming to the complete freedom of mind through metta, what we call as metta cheto vimutti. So one can, this is the maximum that one can reach through samatha in the loving kindness, through loving kindness meditation, metta cheto vimutti. And this is so powerful. And nowadays it will be very, very useful, because now the world is burning with anger, burning with ill will. So if people are practicing metta, loving kindness, it will be really a blessing to the whole world. So your mind gets really open, rather than being shrinked, narrowed down only to a limited person, limited a self. Now the mind being completely pervaded, completely blossomed, completely opened, and completely liberated, maybe temporary, through loving kindness. So therefore, metta cheto vimutti is one of the profound teaching of the Buddha, where one can completely open up, free one's mind based on loving kindness. Now if we get into the verse, karaniyam atta kusalena yantam santam padam abhisamiccha sakko ujucha sujucha suvachochassa mudu anatiman. Now actually the qualities explained in this sutta are extremely useful for the yogis. So you can see how Buddha is in a way molding us for the spiritual development. And we sometimes ignore these things, and we are targeting immediate realizations, immediate understandings, immediate insights, immediate vipassana. Sometimes we are aiming at. But here, Buddha is telling very fundamental kinds of human wholesome qualities in this sutta. Karaniyam atta kusalena, the one who is intending doing good for himself. Santang padang abhisamiccha. Now he is aiming at achieving the complete, say, calmness, that is the attaining of Nibbana. So this is what one should be done, skilled in the good, having made the breakthrough to the peaceful state. So that is the Nibbana. So now he is aiming, his objective is attaining Nibbana. So in order to achieve it, so this is what he has to do. Sakko, he should be able. Uju, he should be upright. Suju, very upright. Suacho, amenable to advice. Suacho. Mudu, has to be soft. Anatimani, without arrogance, without conceit. Now this very first verse itself is showing us really beautiful qualities, human qualities that one can have. Sakko. So he has to be very skillful. So if you are practicing Anapanasati, you should be skillful in handling it. How to allow the body to settle, maintaining proper posture, keeping your attention at the nostril, not allowing the mind to get distracted. Even if it gets distracted, you are slowly bringing it back, again establishing mindfulness on the breath. So likewise, if whatever the meditation technique, there are a lot of abilities, lot of skills are to be developed. So you have to be skillful in that. Say if you are practicing metta, as we just discussed, so you have to do it systematically, step by step. So you are skillful in that. You know how to do it, and you are practically doing it. So not only theoretical knowledge, but practically also you know what to do it, how to do it. So you are skillful in that. say while you are practicing walking meditation, you know how to do it, how to properly walk, how to keep your attention, what are the things to be observed, how you are aiming your attention to each and every step, each and every phenomena, each and every sensation. So likewise, there are certain skill that we need to develop. So that is the skill that we are talking here, particularly in the meditation. But not only that, actually you have to be skillful in maintaining your morality and say continuing your practice and maintaining the samadhi, concentration, and continuously practicing vipassana so that you are being able to develop wisdom. So likewise, the whole path is a kind of a skillful development of wholesome qualities, necessary wholesome qualities, what we call as the bodhipakkhya dhamma, the necessary qualities for the enlightenment. So we should be skillful in doing that. So the first quality is sakko. So one should be skillful, and then uju, and one should be upright. In a way we can say uju, direct. It's not wavering. You know this is the way to do it and you are doing it, and you are very much honest in doing it. And that's further Buddha emphasized as suju, more upright. So assume that you are maintaining a family life. So uju means that you are maintaining it to the kind of truthful way, honest way, not cheating. You're not maintaining a double standard. Rather, what you say is what you do. What you do is what you say. So likewise, kind of a upright attitude and truthfulness, honesty, all these things come together. So that makes so you are more focused onto the spiritual development and you are a truthful person. You are not a cheaty person. Upright and very upright. And then suacho. And this is something very difficult nowadays, particularly in the, say, educated people, particularly with monks, particularly when you become an adult. So amenable to advice, it's very difficult to get, because we think that I am the person, I am the boss, say I am the perfect one, say, I am the one who knows, then who else can advise me? So this is the kind of conceit we are sometimes having. So as we get educated, as we become the senior, then all these other kind of defilements come into the picture. So now you are not ready to listen to another person. Probably the others may be junior to you, they may be your subordinates, and you are not ready to listen. And even when someone above you, or say more greater than you, more noble than you, he's trying to advise, still if we are adamant, then actually very difficult to change ourselves. So different, say, professions, different states, family status, education, degrees, all sorts of things make us very difficult to advise, and we are not ready to accept the advice, someone else's advice. In order to accept, we need to have very ground to earth, down to earth kind of a mindset. But if we are very much like covering up ourselves, closing our windows, closing our mind, then there is no way another person, another Kalyana Mitra can help us, because we are with all doors closed. We are not ready to accept. But on the other hand, Buddha tells us, suacho. Okay, you are ready to accept, you are ready to listen. Easily you can be advised. others can, if others are seeing a fault in you, they come and tell you. And if you are a person who is quite proud, conceited, high-minded, then even when they see, they notice some fault in you, they may not come and tell you. So how to maintain in oneself that others may come and tell us our fault? That's a kind of a blessing. So what happens today is that we are not maintaining that kind of humble attitude. Instead of that, what we are maintaining is that you are the person, I am the guy, I am the boss. So that kind of mentality basically very much repels others, repels the Kalyana Mitras away from us. Even when they notice something, a mistake in ourselves, so they may not come and tell us because we are conceited, we are proud. But if we are able to maintain a very, say, suvacho, acceptive, receptive, approachable kind of a person, then they may have their natural kindness. So out of compassion, they may come and tell us, okay, you better correct this fault, you better correct this misconduct. You have noticed this particular mistake in you, you have done that. So please correct that, it's not suitable. And they may even tell us, okay, you better practice this, you better practice this. So likewise also they may tell us, because they find ourselves as an approachable person. We are ready to listen. And on top of that, Buddha mentioned mudu, soft. You are a soft person. You are not a rude person. Rather, you are a soft, gentle person. So that another person can easily come towards you. They can come and talk to you. So you are receptive, you are gentle, soft. Then easily another person can come and talk to you. It doesn't mean that they can cheat you. You are wise, by the way. As a result of that, you know whether they are trying to trick you. But here what we are talking is, if the others, here what we are talking are the, say, Buddha, Sangha, the Kalyana Mitras. So for them, they have to have a feeling that I am a person who is approachable. This particular person is approachable. The Kalyana Mitras may come and teach us, tell us, advise us, because you are a soft, able to advise and receiving advices. So that quality is available. And anatimani, so you are not conceited, you are without arrogance. So you are not high-minded or proud person, rather you are a ground-to-earth character. I think we already completed 30 minutes, but I'll continue another verse. Santussakocha, Subharocha, Appakichocha, Sallahukavutti, Santindriocha, Nipakocha, Appagabbu, Kulesu Anubindu. Actually, particularly mentioned for monks, certain qualities are mentioned for monks. Anyway, Santussako, he is content, he is happy. Not that always thinking something lacking and unsatisfied, discontented. That is a kind of a negative mindset. Rather, this person who is now working towards Nibbana is a person who is happy, a contented person. Santussako, happy person. Happy not because that he has millions, billions and all these properties, not because that he may have all the wealth, but internally he is happy. Spiritual practice has made him happy. Subharo, and others can easily support you. Now say for example, if one is a monk, say if he is given, if this particular monk is given some basic breakfast, basic say lunch, so if he is complaining, I need this, I need that, I mean this is not enough, then the lay people may find it is very difficult to support him, very difficult to satisfy him, he's asking too much. But on the other hand, if this particular monk is not complaining, he is quite happy, whatever with whatever the given, and again grateful, not complaining, so then he is easy to support. So the others may find it's not a burden for them. So the lay people may not find this particular monk is not a burden to them. But sometimes it is the opposite happens. Monks are asking too much money, too much support, support for the, say, building up of their whatever the kutis or temple. Many, many things are there. Various projects are there. So what happens is lay people simply ignore. They avoid going to that temple. So these are common things happening today, even during the Buddha's time. So when monks are asking too much, then lay people simply avoid going even to that temple. But on the other hand, if monks are simply continuing their practice and they play a role model and they advise through the Dhamma, they too are also practicing Dhamma, then it's naturally lay people start supporting. It is not that you need to ask the support. Rather, they will ask and ask, the lay people come approach and ask Pante what you need. So that is where Buddha mentioned, you are a happy person and you are easily supportable. Appakicho, and you are with less work, less duties. So when one has too many duties, then you may not have enough time to the practice. So as lay people, you have to have some time for your practice. And as monks, we have to have enough time for the practice. So if we are burdened with so many duties, then definitely that is not the path. So therefore, there are certain other suttas Buddha mentioned, even a seka pukkala, even a trainee should not overwhelm by too much of tasks, should not take too many responsibilities. He should always take care of his practice. Because he is not fully enlightened yet, still some more things to do. As a result of that, Buddha advised, okay, do not get unnecessarily involved with too much of things. Do not ignore or neglect your welfare, your progress by excessively involved with some others' activities. So this is an advice that Buddha has given. Appakicho, sallahuka vutti, and you are with a frugal way of living. So you have simple way of living, okay, things are there, I mean only the essential things are there, and no much of too many things. So his life is simple. You have less responsibilities, santindriya, and peaceful faculties. Your faculties are quite peaceful, you are maintaining kind of a restraint. Sense restraint is maintained. Nipako, you are with very sharp wisdom. You have very sharp wisdom, judicious. Appagabbo, and kulesu anunugiddo, appagabbo, courteous. Without any kind of gross way of behavior, rather, you are a soft behavior is there. Sometimes people are, whenever they come up with the situation, they do the opposite, more aggressively. But here, appagabbo means, so you are maintaining a kind of amenable, peaceful kind of a character. And kulesu anunugiddo, you are not too much involved with the families. Now, this is particularly for the monks. Now, if they have too much attachment to various devotees, such families, considering concern about their projects, duties, their tasks, then he may not have his own life. Continuously, a lot of things are there. So continuously, every day, he has to attend some more other work of the devotees. So this is what has happened mostly to the monks, because they don't have time for themselves. Rather, they have a lot of responsibilities coming from the lay people. This is in a way not the path. So what Buddha advice is, so maintain some time for yourself, keep some time for yourself, for your practice, and do not engage too much excessively with others' affairs and do not have unnecessary attachment towards the families. Any intimacy, any close relationship have to be avoided, have to maintain some distance. So monk has to think that he is a monk now, not a lay person. So the lay people have to be kept with little distance. It doesn't mean that the monk is behaving like a lord and the looking at the lay people with the kind of a condemning attitude. Rather, he's maintaining kind of a distance because it is the too much involvement is not something Buddha recommended. So these are interesting qualities that Buddha has highlighted in this Metta Sutta. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Osanai Bhante. Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes, can.
Okay. So start with the questions. We have 6 questions today. First question is regarding mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Sir, my sitting practice is breathing mindfulness, Anapanasati practice. Much merits for your kindness and this program. I could learn the techniques of how to establish mindfulness and continue with the observations. Most of the time, the breath fades away and gets very subtle in 5 to 10 minutes. After the breath fades away, the attention goes naturally to the body, which feels like a hollow triangle due to the sitting posture. My attention is slowly drawn to the subtle movements of the body inside, which feels similar to a fluid or movement of a liquid. I don't know if this is element characteristics or even the element is apo or vayo. Is it necessary to know these Dhamma explanations to continue the practice? Thank you for your guidance. Much merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. Now, actually, if you have heard about these elements characteristics, there may be little advantage, but when you are going through it, if you are trying to recognize it, or if you are trying to map that quality with what you have learned, then that would be a distraction. So if naturally you know, okay, this is water, this is heat, this is air, this is earth, so likewise immediately, naturally, without effort, you are able to recognize, then that is well and good. But if you are thinking, okay, what is this? I mean, is it patavi? Is it apo? Is it tejo? So likewise, if you are thinking, then that is not the point. That is not the correct method. So therefore, more you familiar with it, probably you may immediately recognize what is the type of element which is currently showing or currently have become more prominent. But otherwise, actually, you don't need to think about the category. Whether it is patavio, apo, tejo, ayo. Now, you don't need to think about them. Rather, you need to observe, investigate carefully what is happening to this particular characteristic. Now, say, for example, you are seeing certain vibrations. So, continuously something is vibrating. Now, you better carefully watch that, carefully observe that. You don't need to think that this is AI element and AI element has these characteristics. Now this is something different. This is where that you are taking book knowledge to the front. Rather, what you need to do is carefully observing what happens to that characteristic. What happened to that element characteristics that will contribute towards the wisdom. Okay.
Question number 2 of 6. This is mindful walking. Dear Bhante, much merits for your service. My question is regarding the walking practice. I start focusing on the lower body and sensations on the soles, initially noting left and right. I can distinguish various sensations and establish fairly good mindfulness after 5 to 10 minutes and continue. After some time, the verbalization of noting left-right drops, but there is some form of noting going on inside. It can be based on the sounds of my walking and in some form of a tune and rhythm, very faint and subtle one. I could catch it because of sharpening of mindfulness and glad about it. Do I have to work on settling this, similar to settling and subsiding internal talk, or shall I let it be and just be aware of it? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think you can continue without, considering it as a real threat or real burden, real obstacle, because more you pay attention to the present moment phenomena, so this inner chatter become weaker and weaker. So it's naturally happening in the background. So what you need to do is to focus onto the selected phenomena. Now say you are doing walking meditation, and each and every time various sensations are available, particularly to the foot, you are paying more attention to that. You don't need to worry whether the inner chatter become less and all these things. I mean, you don't need to worry and try to purposely reduce that. Rather, you are paying more attention to the whatever the bodily phenomena, more and more you pay attention to that, given more prominence to that, automatically the inner chatter become less and less, and ultimately even completely stop. Therefore, don't worry about that. Maybe actually in the later, when you are in the stage of Chittanupassana, you can even directly confront, you can see how inner chatter is happening, how thoughts are contributing, how you sometimes getting involved, and all these things you can later investigate when you are in more in the Chittanupassana. Till that, you better pay more attention to the bodily phenomena. So after you pay enough attention to bodily phenomena, the inner chatter may become kind of background thing.
Question number 3 of 6. This is mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, I try to be mindful on a day-to-day activities, as these days it is not easy to find 1 or 2 hours every day in my schedule. I have a few years experience in walking and sitting meditation under your guidance. Therefore, I am aware of the technique of how to establish mindfulness and how to continue. However, in day-to-day activities practice, example brushing teeth, it is very difficult to keep a consistent form of mindfulness end-to-end. I start with all the attention and effort and observe most of the sensations when brushing teeth. Within a minute or two, I lose the grip and my mind slips to something else, and I come to the sensation after a few minutes. Next time, I go prepared and still it happens. I can say maximum only 50% of the time I could really observe the sensations, meaning other half I was somewhere else, unmindful. This is like a touch and go all the time, unlike the usual practice of walking and sitting, where I can safely say that at least 30 to 40 minutes I could continue with consistent mindfulness. Thought of reflecting this to Bhante for your wider valuable guidance. With metta, that's the end of the question.
I think you may slowly grow. Now, probably you can remember when you start even sitting and walking, there also you face the same situation. Say earlier days, say your mind is not keeping well with the walking meditation, not keeping well in the sitting meditation, still it's jumping here and there. So that same thing is available in the say daily activities. Now you are not maintaining it. Now we are telling maybe about 50%, doesn't matter. But later you can, relaxed observation can be maintained even in the daily activities. It may happen naturally, slowly. I think you are doing well, nothing to worry. The question indicates your concern about it. Your eagerness to grow, doesn't matter, that is good. That will drive you towards further practice, that is good. But anyway, don't worry. It may evolve, further improve with time.
Question number 4 of 6. This is a general question. Venerable Bhante, a meditator's experience of strongly perceiving the 4 elements, dhatu, in daily life has been identified in an online resource as the adverse psychological experience of disassociation with the body. While in the Buddhist practice, this experience is considered favorable. I am uncomfortable with this lack of agreement in the 2 viewpoints. Could you kindly please explain this? Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. I think even in the Buddhist point of view, so you are maintaining kind of a balance. Now, say for example, when Buddha is talking five faculties, Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. So you are having kind of a soft part through Saddha. So you are not too critical, you are not too dry, but you have kind of a Saddha, faith. So that makes you kind of a mild, soft, amenable kind of a contribution is also coming from that Saddha. Then effort, you are continuing your practice. Sometimes still results are not there, but you are continuing. So that's continuous effort is represented. And you are not allowing yourself to become lethargic, not allowing yourself to ignore the practice, but you are continuing. So the effort is also playing a role. Sati, the mindfulness is there. So can maybe assume that now you have continuous mindfulness, and even during the practice, say in the say Dhatu Manasikara, various elements are there, so you can be mindful about the present moment, how these different element characteristics are coming up. So you are having enough mindfulness, and that mindfulness is not only limited to this practice, rather it may represent in your whole life. It's like a companion, like a monitoring process. So it will guide you, telling you that, okay, this particular drawback, this particular shortcoming, mistake is with you. You better correct it. Okay, this kind of a good quality, this kind of say ability is with you, skill with you. You can be happy about it. So likewise, it is a kind of a companion helping you, kind of a friend helping you. Therefore, it is not only limited to the guided, or rather the sitting practice. So these qualities, even though we are, you know, sharpening during our sitting session and maybe walking session, but they start retaining with us, helping us, guiding us during our whole life. So, I mean, now even if we go to Samadhi, say now you are able to precisely concentrate on one thing. So that may be the picture what you have at the beginning. But later, say even this Samadhi evolves and you become experiencing clarity of mind, very fair mind, without any distraction. So likewise, you are getting benefits. And even the wisdom, say various insights are now happening, and you become more and more matured, fairly spiritual, and you become more steady. So these are certain qualities that we are talking. And overall, if we consider when we are growing, so we can't say that we are completely deprived from the world. We are completely disassociated from the body and whatever it is. Rather, we are maintaining kind of a very balanced attitude. But we can't say, of course, we are reaching that state immediately. Time to time, ups and downs may happen. And this kind of a beautiful balance may happen after some practice. At the beginning, we may go to certain drifts, certain to the extremes even. Say, sometimes you go to one extreme thinking that I have to be completely isolated, I have to be completely secluded, I have to withdraw myself from everything. So you are going to one extreme. And on the other hand, say if you are practicing loving kindness, compassion and all these things, okay, you want to get involved, you want to help others. So you go into another extreme. So how to balance these two? It is not that you become completely a selfish person. Not that you become completely driven by compassion and all these qualities. So how to balance it? So it's a very challenging thing, and in a way it's easy to tell than doing it. So basically, therefore, what we can say is kind of a balance may happen in the future with the practice. It is not that we are very much completely disassociated from the whole thing and become kind of an indifferent kind of attitude. Rather, when it is necessary, when the opportunity is there, it is coming to you, you recognize it, you are doing it wholeheartedly. And if it is not coming towards you and you are very well aware now, it is not my business, then you mind your own business. So therefore, I can't even agree that the so the Buddhist mindfulness practice, true that it appear like kind of little self-centered or minding our own business kind of a thing at the beginning, but ultimately you become a good person, you become a good example, and even when others are crying, others are tense, others are stressed, so you feel cool, you feel calm, you feel relaxed. Then others may wonder how this person is behaving like this. So likewise, if we consider the big picture, I think we can't say that it is complete deprival from the whole setup. Rather, I think maybe temporary deprivation is there, but later you get properly involved as well.
Question number 5 of 6, general question again. Dear Venerable Sir, can you please explain 11 types observed in the breath explained in Anapanasati Sutta? Also, how can you see the breath as past, present and future? That is explained in the same sutta with metta. Yeah. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, this is a kind of a general definition common to all the forms, feelings, perceptions and formations and consciousness. So all the aggregates Buddha mentioned, atita anagata pachuppanna ajjattanga bahindava dureva santikeva hinanga panitanga. So likewise Buddha defines, so that all the phenomena are included. Now say for example, if breath has happened already, so it becomes atita. If it is happening right now, it becomes the present. Going to happen in the future, it becomes the future, anagata. Then say ajjata bahidda, now you are perceiving, assume that you are experiencing say the middle of the breath, so it becomes the ajjata. Bahidda then becomes say the previous part, the other part, or the complete say complete outside of what your present moment awareness becomes the bahidda. So likewise we can define we can understand these 11 characteristics. But purposely trying to recognize all these 11, I feel little bit too much, because then it might add little bit of tension to your practice. So if it is naturally you are understanding it, then I feel it is much better. Therefore, it is not really you are putting too much effort and you are doing kind of a strenuous practice to fully comprehend all these 11 characteristics. Then it would be a very tiresome exercise for you. But while you are observing breath in a relaxed manner, detached manner, balanced manner, maybe some of these characteristics may be evident to you. That is much healthy. Therefore, practice should not be too much strenuous. So that is something that we need to remember. You know, as Buddha mentioned, it has to be a balanced approach. It has to be a very kind of a soft approach, but it has to be a steady approach. Not too much strenuous approach. It is true that all these things are mentioned, say all the characteristics are mentioned, but that doesn't mean that we need to know each and every bit of it. Very difficult. So Buddha might have mentioned that so that to cover the whole comprehensive spectrum he has mentioned, but it doesn't mean that we need to know each and every bit. So based on our capacity and based on our the sharpness of the faculties at that particular day, okay, certain things might be evident. Maybe another day, certain other parts may be evident, and then another parts may be quite visible. So likewise, So don't push yourself to look at various things. Rather, allow it to naturally happen. Rather than you are controlling and trying to manipulate the situation, just softly try to be aware of things, then slowly things may be more and more evident to you. So, I mean, to answer your question, so the past breath, maybe the breath that it has gone, probably you might have noticed that. And currently, suppose there is a breath that you are observing, and when compared to the past breath, the present breath may be a little longer, maybe a little shorter. So how you do this comparison is based on the past breath and the present breath. So that means you are somewhat aware of the characteristics of the past breath. You can even remember. But what you are experiencing right now is the present breath. And probably you can have a little estimation about what would be the situation for the future breath, but you are not yet experiencing it. So what we can really experience is only the present breath. Therefore, it may be a kind of a rough estimation, remembering that we are talking here.
Question number six of six. So this is the last question, and it's a general question actually. Says, dear Bhante, much merits for recommencing this valuable program after your visit to India. Hope Bhante's travels were fruitful with metta. I think they want to know.
Yeah, actually, I had a really hard time there, pretty challenging. We went to Bodh Gaya first, thought of having some good time. We got enough facilities at the Thai monastery, but unfortunately, I got sick and had to face through food indigestion, and then it turned into diarrhea. And so about 7-8 days, I am fully down and even walk very slowly, couldn't catch up the typical pace. And so I was thinking when to leave Buddha Gaya, because to that mindset has arisen. It has become a really hard time for me at that time. And then we went to Calcutta. And there are also another trouble, because the person the monk who organized the retreat was not there. And he, just before we arrived there, he talked to me and mentioned that he has to come to Sri Lanka because his teacher has passed away. He has to attend the funeral. So he apologized and then can't help. Then anyway, we went there. And by the way, the participants are eager to the practice and they are enthusiastic. But we ourselves have to work out, has to face some challenges. Somehow we manage it. And then once we come to the Andhra Pradesh, so that is there is a very beautiful monastery there. And that is fairly good actually. The people are very kind and the environment is fairly conducive for the practice. And the environment is pretty good and really nice environment is available everywhere. I mean, very silent and really good for the practice. And many people are even practicing, and some monks are also there. And that part is pretty good. But overall, pretty challenging trip actually I went through. And of course, Mr. Percy, who joined from Perth, was quite helpful. Actually, without him, actually, I couldn't do it at all. And especially during the sick period, he helped me, and he had actually some good medicine at that time, and some other monks, few other Indian monks actually I found, they are quite good and they helped me. So likewise, I mean, pretty challenging. And some things actually that I learned is even while at Kalalgod, I mentioned this to them. So when we are going out only, we understand the value of our country. So in terms of, say, Calcutta and all this Bihar state, so we are in a very pretty fortunate level. So we can appreciate what we have, and we again can be grateful of what we have. And therefore, rather than being depressed and rather than thinking that we don't have this, we don't have that, we can see what a kind of low state or kind of a pathetic state that certain human beings are living. in a very, very poor kind of a state, how even they are surviving in these kind of areas, particularly say Calcutta, extremely devastating type of situation is there. I mean, extremely populated and not that conducive for the practice, by the way. And again, on the other hand, it is amazing how Anagarika Dharmapala and others have started the Mahabodhi Society there, because it's completely into different religion. And at that time, how they come up and how they establish this society, and even they build up a monastery, rather a temple, and even in the Bodh Gaya, how they were able to recover the Buddhist site from the Mahanta. And I mean, remarkable. So once we go there, only we can understand what a kind of a thing they really have done. So, I mean, it's really challenging. And they coming from Sri Lanka, doing it in that environment is extremely challenging. So that is a lot of gratitude that we can have towards these Anagarika Dharmapala, Olcott and all these people. What a kind of contribution that they have done towards the Buddhists. And on the other hand, another lesson that I understood is that it is not that always the things are favorable. And sometimes we expect that every time the situation should be favorable, everything may happen in the proper way, all the conditions may be met, and the situation may be a good, others may respect, others may satisfy, others may compete, others may be there for you. So you may think like that, but sometimes it is not happening like that. You may have to go through ups and downs in the life, and when we go through those ups and downs, how are we able to maintain our mental integrity? How are we able to maintain calmness of the mind? So that is pretty challenging. Actually, we can talk when we are outside the situation, but when we are really going through a hard time, how can we maintain that? That is pretty challenging. So overall, that's what I am trying to learn. So when things are really going wrong, and when things are not favorable, when conditions are pretty challenging, how, without getting angry, without becoming restless, without becoming tensed, without becoming stressed, as practitioners, are we able to maintain some kind of calmness without getting panicked? So these are, I mean, in a way, these challenging situations help us to understand how, what more things that we need to do, how more opportunities are there for us to further grow, what is lacking still, what are the drawbacks still we have, what are the deficiencies still we have, how imperfect we are still. Something like that we can understand honestly. So these are the things that I like to share with you, and thank you for the question, by the way. Yeah. And again, I like to thank Suranga also, that he also encouraged me and he prepared certain facilities. That also I like to appreciate.
That's the last question, Vante. So I think we've gone over time, so we can end the program. I would first like to thank Vante for his valuable time and answering all our questions, and also share the merits with the organizers and all beings, both seen and unseen, who enable this program. I would also like to thank and pass our merits for the participants for joining the program today and practicing and sharing their questions. Teruvan Saranai. Sadhu, yes. Sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, Teruvan Saranai.